Another similar subject is strip clubs and how the feminists... See, there's two ways of looking at strip clubs. Mm. I'm confused, and I'm sure you as a sort of proto-feminist would
proto.
Be...
Proto!
All right. You as a, well, this is sort of the, at the younger end of the feminist...
that's fair,
feminist
yeah.
conversation, would be confused about too. So go on, what's your attitude to things right. like Spearmint Rhino, you know, which is a lap dancing
yeah.
club?
Sir, Sarah Pascoe said a thing... where she was like, isn't it just a signal that the patriarchy has won, that when women become liberated, men are like, okay, go on then, take your clothes off and dance for us now because you're so liberated. Or like, you know, pole dancing is a form of exercise. And it feels very like weird, but I don't know. I think it's one of those things where it's like every woman can just do whatever she wants and there's no one way to be
yeah, so you
a
wouldn't,
woman.
So
I'm not against strip clubs or anything because I think it becomes... What happens is, so if you've read The Handmaid's Tale, I talk about The Handmaid's Tale all the time, but it's like, I do study it, so I do have to think about it a lot.
Yeah, I don't know, about 10 minutes into this podcast, and you've already mentioned The Handmaid's Tale. I haven't mentioned The Beatles yet.
There it is.
Apart from there.
So The Handmaid's Tale was, it faced a lot of backlash because of Margaret Atwood's criticism of sort of radical feminism. But I think what she was saying is that anything on any extreme is always going to be dangerous. And what it turns into is, I think this is why feminism gets a bad rap of being like man-hating, because it becomes too radical and then it ends up Puritan, which is the other end of the scale. But then they're actually, I like to think of it as more as kind of a circle, and you're in the middle of the circle, and then as soon as you start going to either the far left or the far right, you end up actually being at the same thing, which is just of restricting people's freedoms. So I think that I have to be pro strip clubs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is the split in feminism. Basically, what's brought it up again is Spearmint Rhino in Sheffield. They did an undercover report on Spearmint Rhino in Sheffield, and they found that it wasn't like lap dancing and pole dancing is normally pictured, how you normally see it. What they said was that the women were naked for a start, and they were touching men in ways that we can't mention on a family podcast like this. So that's what they said. It was basically the Puritan wing of feminism, I think, that was saying this and saying it ought to be closed down.
It depends what if the women are there of their own free choice, and if the women are truly choosing to be there and they're doing it because that's what they want to do to make money, like, that's fine. There's a series of videos by a woman called Amanda Knox. I don't know whether you've heard of her.
I think so.
So, yeah, I feel like you'll know her name, but not actually remember
Foxy
it.
Foxy?
No. What? Amanda Knox, she was a girl who was in prison for 4 years, in Italian prison, after she was accused of killing a British foreign exchange.
She was known as Foxy Knox.
She was like, but you shouldn't call her Foxy
Knox.
No,
I know
you
shouldn't,
right.
That's her tabloid name.
So she was treated really, shamed really badly in the media, and obviously she didn't kill this woman, but she was in prison for 4 years, which is terrifying. It was actually some guy, but she wasn't provided with an interpreter, and unfairly treated in the
investigation.
Yeah, it was a botched investigation, then she was unfairly treated in the media, blah blah blah. But she's done a series of videos called The Scarlet Letter, which is about women facing shame in various different places. And there was one about a girl who was a cheerleader for the NFL. Obviously, you've seen the outfits that they wear in these cheerleading NFLs, which are just super, super skimpy and stuff. And she came out about a lot of stuff that was really sexist in it, that they had to go for annual weigh-ins, and told stories about these girls who would sweat it out before weigh-ins. So they would sit in their cars with the heat turned really high up, and they were like encouraged to do that, to stay under this certain weight. And then she posted a picture in it, like a bodysuit that was like lacy or whatever, and was asked to resign, and then was eventually fired from the Sensations or something ridiculous was the name. It was a New Orleans group, and she was from Mississippi. And then she got labelled as kind of like a feminist, and she was not really that at all. And then a lot of other feminists came out and was like, well, if she's going to wear that outfit, she's being treated as she should be. And like, if you're being a cheerleader, then it's, you know, against feminism. But I think that, like, you don't have to dress in a sack and be completely anti, like,
anti-glamour?
Anti-glamour, yeah, I think, to be a feminist. And it lends, you know, it's another version of the argument about walk-on girls.
Yes. And you're in favour of walk-on girls, or you're not against walk-on girls?
I'm not against
it. You don't think their jobs should be taken away from them?
No, well, but that's also a class thing, in it. And so was this cheerleader thing, because it was this part of Mississippi where one of the ways that girls actually can sort of raise themselves up was dancing and becoming NFL guys, which is the same as men becoming football players, which is one of the ways that people in the South are really, or people in poorer neighbourhoods, help themselves. And that's the same with walk-on girls. Like, it becomes, feminism becomes a class issue then.
So, yeah, you're saying that middle-class privileged white girls can go around being feminists because it doesn't affect them, whereas poor black girls in Mississippi...
Well, she wasn't even black, she was white, but, like it doesn't restrict me in any way to be anti all of those things, because I'm never in a position where I have to, because I'm supported in education and all that kind of stuff, and I would never be.
No, I'll take your point.
You know what I mean?
I'll take your point, and the same thing does apply to Spearmint Rhino.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. But then you just get into a question of how far are these girls choosing to do it because it's their only option, or choosing to do it because they want to do it?
Yes, I know. I suspect in a lot of cases nobody would particularly choose to do that sort of work, but then again, nobody would maybe choose to
be a boring office job. Like, precisely. Which is better?
Yeah. Now, I've listened to your tune. We'll start with yours. Ooh. This week. I listened to it all the way through, and it was a real shame to only play 20 seconds, because I thought it was a great track. So we'll play it. We'll play it,
and then I'll explain.
And then you can explain it. It's called Blue Lights.
Don't you run when you hear the sirens coming. When you hear the sirens coming, you better not run, cause the siren's not coming for you. What have you done? You went to school that day. Was a bit late, but it was a Monday. Kept after class for answering back. You apologized and it harmonized. What have you done?
And the blue lights, obviously, of a police vehicle.
Which I didn't realise the first time I listened to it. I had to listen to it like twice, and then I was like, blue lights, I understand now. So it's by a girl called Georgia Smith.
Is it pronounced Georgia?
Yeah, Georgia. How are you pronouncing it?
Jonja. It's J-O-N-J-A.
No, J-O-R-J-A.
Oh, it's an R, is it?
It's an R,
Georgia.
Yeah.
Right.
Georgia Smith. This is her most famous, most popular song or whatever. And it's probably not my favourite anymore, because I like some of the other ones, but I thought this one's got a really good message as well, because it's kind of about gun crime and knife crime in London, which is quite apt.
It is.
Right now.
Well, because I was talking to you about school exclusions. We were talking
in the car,
and being a big factor in knife crime. And that's really about, you know, how it starts. You know, you're a little bit disruptive in school, and then you're excluded from school, and then you're on the street, and the devil makes work for idle hands and all that stuff. And that's what the song's about, really, in many ways.
But she's got such a pretty voice.
Sounds a bit like Lily Allen.
No, she doesn't sound like Lily Allen at all. I don't think so.
No, a bit like Amy Winehouse. House to an extent.
I think she's quite original, though. I think she's not...
I think it's maybe the London thing, London sort of accent.
But she doesn't sound like Lily Allen's style at all.
No, not the style, but the voice sounds similar.
Really?
She's got the same intonation, I think, but I might be wrong.
Anyway. I don't completely agree.
Anyway, it's 20 seconds of Georgia.
Georgia.
I don't know why. I'm sure it had an A.
It's an R. I think in her logo thing, it's quite a deep R, maybe. But it's definitely Georgia Smith.
Georgia Smith and Blue Lights. Now, unlike you, I sometimes take guidance from the emailers. You know, emailers are always suggesting tunes, and you usually ignore them.
Just because I forget to listen to them, not because I'm listening to them and then deciding that I don't like it.
You're just being a bit slack, really. Well, I've got this email from James Blacklock. And he says, hi, Martin. And he's, I assume he must have been a teacher at some stage or a youth worker. So he said he was talking to a group of teenagers. And he says, I was greatly...
He has a lot of kids.
He might have a load of teenagers of his own, but it did sound like it was in a school context. He said, I was greatly surprised to learn that none of them had ever heard Big Yellow Taxi by Joni Mitchell. I instructed them, that's why I thought it must be kids in a school, to check out Joni's early album Clouds, and in particular Joni's version of Both Sides Now. I also told them that every single girlfriend I'd had during my 20s had a copy of Joni's later album Blue amongst their often fairly meagre collection. I suspect Ruthie may already be familiar with Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, I am quite familiar with Joni Mitchell, only because it gets so many references in films.
Yes.
So then I was like, Joni Mitchell, who's she?
Yeah, and a lot of the people that you admire, writers and things, reference Joni Mitchell.
I can't remember who it is that references Joni Mitchell a lot. I can't remember.
Well, most of people do. He says, anyway, so instead, so he's not suggesting I play Joni Mitchell because he thinks she doesn't know Joni Mitchell.
What a roller coaster.
What a roller coaster indeed. So instead, I suggest Light Flight by Pentangle, who were a sort of British folk jazz, sort of hippie-ish, early 70s band. I suggest Light Flight by Pentangle as a possibility. And this was featured on an album called Basket of Light. It was also the theme from a TV show, Take Three Girls, the TV show, set in swinging London.
Swinging London.
Yes. Take Three Girls, a television drama series broadcast by the BBC between 1969 and 1971, which follows three young women sharing a flat in swinging London. I have no recollection of Take Three Girls at all. And I spoke to your mother and she doesn't either.
Right.
So, yeah.
Should we play your song then?
So let's play. Have we gone on about it too much?
Yeah, just slightly.
Okay, here's the song.
Let's get away, you say, find a better place. Miles and miles away from the city's race. Look around for someone lying in the sunshine, marking time. Hear the sighs, close your eyes. Ba-da-ba-doo-da-da-da-ba-doo-da-da.
It's Joni Mitchell.
It's not Joni Mitchell, but it does sound a bit like
it. Does sound quite like Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, but that was very popular, late 60s, early 70s. Light Flight by Pentangle. John Renbourn. John Renbourn was a guitarist quite well known in the folk world. So we've come up with a couple of winners. I like your tune, you like my tune.
If you do have any suggestions of songs, and you do want to email them in, for me to ignore them. No, it's the email is martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
So let's...
You can find the full versions of both of those songs, so Blue Lights by George Smith and something by Pentang.
Light Flight
by Pentang on the Spotify playlist.
Pentangle. You know,
I think it's Pentang, like Wu-Tang Clan. No,
it's more like, you know, folky, hippie-ish Pentangle symbols.
Kind of like what they call those witches.
Yeah, like those witches, white witches.
No. You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Wiccan,
yeah.
Like, kind of like that. You can find them on Spotify. You can see it through the Ruthie, Me and My Dad, and that'll get you to the playlist, or just Martin and Ruth, and that'll get you to our profile, and then you can get the playlist from that.
So you've forgotten all this because we've been away for a week, and so this
so
is the first
practice.
One out of practice. John Cairns is in touch. He says he likes the podcast. He picked it up from Talk Sport in season one, and he's with us right into season three. Brilliant. And he lives in Kyiv in Ukraine. Well, Kyiv, K-Y-I-V, but I think it's...
How do you say it?
Well,
how's he written it?
Well, we say it Kyiv, don't we?
But Kyiv.
K-Y-I-V. We might find out that's either the local spelling or it could possibly be...
a typo. I'm sure it's the local spelling.
Anyway, he lives there anyway, Kyiv, Ukraine, with his wife and youngest daughter. And he says he loves the podcast so much because his eldest is about the same age as Ruth and it all resonates. My youngest, Emily, is in her last year at the international school, PSI. And we'll be heading off to university next year. I mean, the amazing thing about Ukraine is that it's now become the really hot tourist place. People go on these tours around Chernobyl.
Mm.
We watched Chernobyl on the TV. Fantastic series.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Would you have ever thought from watching that...
Yeah, then you're like, oh, I fancy that, actually.
Well, that's because everything is about experiences now, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
I'm not sure how I feel about tourism around Chernobyl.
No.
It doesn't quite...
It doesn't, does it? But in a way, it's the same as tourism around the concentration camps, and people have been doing that for years. And now
I'm not sure about it. I don't think you learn anything more from going there. I think it's really important for survivors and families of survivors, or families of people who died there. I think that's really important.
But, and that's the same for Chernobyl as it is for
obviously.
Concentration camps.
But I'm not sure how much more you learn from going. I can't speak for Chernobyl, I've never been, but went to Auschwitz with school. We definitely went too young. We were like 12 years old, just too young.
It's like a picnic, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm just not sure whether, I don't think you learn anything more or feel anything more. And if you need to go to the place to understand that it's an atrocity, I don't get that, really.
No, I agree with you.
And then they have a cafe there, and it's just weird.
Well, have I told you that? I know I've told you off air. I just wonder if I've ever told you on the podcast my story about the cheese pasty I got.
Oh, this is not a good story.
At Auschwitz. Did I tell you about this?
Yeah.
It was just the worst thing I've ever... I mean, it really was on every level. It was, you know, and I very rarely complain about foods.
Yeah, but, Dad, you very rarely complain about foods, but you're complaining about food in hell on earth.
Yes, I know.
That's Do you know what I mean?
I didn't complain. I just... All I did was I got this, and I was quite amused that it was so bad. And I did say to Janet, your mother, do you think it'd be in terribly bad taste if I were to complain about the quality of the food in the cafe at Auschwitz? Yeah, probably. Don't tweet it. So I didn't.
And now you've just said it on air.
I've just said it on the podcast, but you know, just to reflect the fact that the whole idea. But I think telling that story actually does point up the fact of how ridiculous it is that Auschwitz is a tourist attraction and that Chernobyl is a tourist attraction. But I think tourism now is a lot of it is people go to places like Chernobyl. It's so you can put a picture on Instagram and tell your friends that you've been there.
Have you ever searched the tag for like Auschwitz?
No.
So, you know, on Instagram, you can search for like a keyword or something, like in tags. So you can look for like Auschwitz and there's like 5,000 plus posts. So obviously some of these won't be bad or whatever. But then there's ones like this of this girl who's taken like an edgy shot of her looking into the distance at Auschwitz. Don't take pictures there. There's, you know, there's plenty of documentary photos that you can look at.
I was at a hotel in Munich once, and Munich is very close to Dachau, which was the first concentration camp. And there was an American tour party in this hotel, and they had their schedule was on a notice board in the hotel. You know, their tour guide had put this up, and it said, you know, for this gang of Americans, and it said, "Don't forget, we're going to Dachau tomorrow. Don't forget your cameras!" Exclamation mark. And I thought that exclamation mark is in the worst taste of any exclamation
mark. That's the worst
taste.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the worst taste punctuation
ever.
Ever.
Should we have some music?
Yes, let's have some music. Start with mine this week, yeah?
All right, yeah.
Here we go.
Sheepdog, standing in the rain. Bullfrog, doing it again. Some kind of happiness is measured out in miles.
Do you recognise them?
I think that was the Beatles, wasn't it?
It was the Beatles. I thought I might catch you out. Because it's... The only reason I play that is because there is a tendency amongst people of your generation to think of the Beatles as, oh, they did some jolly little pop songs, you know, well, then Rigby, or that sort of thing, and not as a very credible rock band, which they were. And obviously, paying 20 seconds of that doesn't... That was Hey Bulldog, by the way.
Right.
From Magical Mystery Tour 1969. Have you heard that before?
I probably have, but I don't remember it. I've probably heard it once.
But it was just really to point out the fact that the Beatles did make... You know, especially the White Album. It's
I'm glad you pointed out that the Beatles were a good band, because it is a niche opinion, and it's good that you've had the bravery to say it.
My bravery is in saying... and I did this on talk radio when somebody said, "You want to..."
So this is recycled material?
No, I didn't play Hey Bulldog. But on talk radio, somebody... "Are you one of those people who say the Beatles are overrated?" And I said, "No, I'm one of those people that say the Beatles are underrated. However great you think the Beatles are, they were actually greater than that."
People like to not like the Beatles, though, you know, some of those things.
But it is popular. I bet there are people, you know, that you've come across at university. I don't know whether...
We've not, to be honest, we've not discussed the Beatles yet.
Really?
Yeah, I know. It's been 3 weeks, Adam. We've not had one conversation about the Beatles.
I can't believe it. I didn't realise you could go through life without, you know, referring to the Beatles at least once a week. Well, there you go. Anyway, do you want me to tell you, that was called Hey Bulldog, and the magazine Time Out, which is sort of London listings magazine, placed that song, Hey Bulldog, at number 27 on their list of the best Beatles songs. So that's not bad, is it?
That's pretty high, yeah.
And it's the genre of that is psychedelic rock. You know, when you see it on Wikipedia or somewhere, it's categorised as psychedelic rock. And people, if you said, name the top five psychedelic rock bands, people would say Grateful Dead and the various other bands that people know about, but people wouldn't say the Beatles.
They wouldn't.
But so I just wanted to point out, as well as being a great pop band, they are a great psychedelic rock band.
All right. And should we have my song?
Let's have
it. Do you want to just play it and then I'll explain afterwards? It's a song called Take Me As I Am.
Shots of the right, that's future me, I'm glad I'm not that guy. With your hand above the fold, you're a scandal in the press. There's powers in your flowers, you're a damsel in distress. Take me as I am, hey, or watch me as I go. She said, take me as I am, or watch me as I go. Melodies of love or selling a dream.
Yes, was that a little band called The Streets?
Actually, Dad, it was Chris Lorenza featuring The Streets.
Right, but it's very much like
The Streets. I've never played any of The Streets stuff because I feel like everyone already knows it. You already know it. And yeah. I just thought it'd be boring.
Very good, I like The Streets.
But they are brilliant and I really like them. So I thought I'd play this Chris Lorenza song. This is from his new album, which came out on October the 11th of this month. So really new. And Chris Lorenza is a Birmingham kind of house and bass sort of rave DJ kind of thing, but he's really big in the Midlands. I'm not really massively into that music. I probably wouldn't have listened to this if it didn't have The Streets on. That's how I kind of saw it. But it is very good of that type of music. You know, people like Annie Mac of like being like Chris Lorenzo is great and stuff. Yeah, but she's a, you know, DJ as well. So yeah, that's the song called Tame As I Am, and obviously The Streets, everyone knows where they're from.
Yeah, they're from The Streets.
Have you ever heard of a thing called Craigslist, like, personal adverts, or, like, Craigslist, like, Lonely Hearts? Do you remember the
Craigslist, very famous in America. Yeah, there's
Craigslist, I mean, a lot of people used it for furniture, you know, like Gumtree or whatever.
Yes.
But I'm sure there's rom-coms and books based on Craigslist,
there are personal ads.
Yeah. So
it's a very big thing in America.
It was a very big thing. It's been taken down now. It's gone, the personal ads.
Well, I think there was a murder, I think.
Oh, was there?
Yeah, I think so.
York University has an equivalent. It's called Your Crush.
Your Crush.
And I love it with all my heart. I think it's brilliant. It's people sending, you either send in completely anonymous, just like, saw you on the 66 bus and thought you were beautiful or whatever, or like, girl in my linguistics lecture, I don't know, whatever, boy in my history seminar, please go out with me or something, like, but, it has been taken down, Dad.
Oh, no.
I can't remember, it was either yesterday or the day before or something. I went to, you know, go and check it, because, as I always do, someone in our flat got on Your Crush. Right. So we've got this big board in our kitchen that's got, you know, things like throw up, or like kiss someone in a club, get kicked out of a club, go to hospital, get on Your Crush, and then there's like a tally chart and you keep track, it's like points or whatever. And so we added get on Your Crush because this boy in our flat got on it. And then a couple of days ago, because someone complained because it uses the F word a lot. How crap is that? So Your Crush has been taken down, but hopefully it's going to get put back up, because it's like genuinely broke my heart when I saw it had been taken down. But luckily, I screenshot 4 of my favourites. Cable Knit Jumper in V-Bar, that's the bra that's attached to one of the colleges, in V-Bar tonight, you are QAF from an unexpected person right under your nose. Some of them are quite cute.
I love them.
I'm in love with our maintenance man and I'm running out of things to break.
That's brilliant.
It's someone's initials and then it says, you said you'd never get a Your Crush, but you deserve one. And then this one's good as well.
So it's like a pun, York Rush.
And your crush. Yeah. There's one for Durham, which is called Tinder, but D-U-R. I think most unis have one, but I just clearly didn't know.
No.
And then this one, hottest girl in TFTV, which is the film and television course. Maybe this year is our year. I thought that was really cute, isn't it? Aren't they brilliant?
They are brilliant. Why has it been taken there? Just because people complained about the language. I think
someone complained about the language or whatever. Yeah.
Or it's probably a bit sort of to do with sexual harassment.
There are some that are, like, really rude, but I think it's okay, and I want it to be okay.
Of course it's okay.
And I just really... I want it to go back up.
They have a similar
like to look at it before I go to bed.
In the Metro newspaper. I know you've seen the Metro.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a newspaper you pick up on the train or on the bus. And they have a feature in there, but they're sort of slightly less literate than the ones that, you know... I was eating a pasty from Greg's sitting opposite you on the 27 bus.
I picked out some of the tamer ones, though, and the ones that I kind of liked and I thought were sweet. But some of them are either, like, incredibly soppy, like, too far soppy, if you know what I mean. They're, you know, it's love at first sight or whatever. Those ones are quite sweet because they're quite realistic. Mm. And then some of them are just, like, you're fit.
But you've not
been... a bit boring.
Not been featured yourself.
Oh, no, Dad. The other thing that people do is, like, people... there's, like, a York, like, meme stuff and whatever, and a lot of the things that will be, like, pictures of people, like, really focused and, like, looking for your initials on Your Crush, because you can type, like, Your Crush and then your initials to see if anyone ever writes about you.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
I don't know whether I should have told you. Maybe it's something that you have to be, like, stay in the uni, but I do love it.
Secrets of York University. And do you have a meme of the week, Ruth?
I think I do. I'll just go to my saved post and see. I've not saved anything. Do you want to know what my... because I save them in my Instagram saved stuff, but my last saved one is the one we used last week. And then the other thing I've saved is revealed the 20 firms behind more than a third of all carbon emissions, which is not funny.
Not funny at all. What thing?
So we can take this, instead of a meme, Dad, I'm going to take this opportunity to tell you about the 20 firms behind more than a third of all carbon emissions.
Well, let me tell you what Andrew Mandrigan says about Extinction Rebellion. A few emails I've not done yet, but he says, in that vein, this is a real sort of thing that a slightly older person would say about Extinction Rebellion. I'd have more respect for Extinction Rebellion if, when protesting at Canary Wharf and City Airport, they didn't stop for lunch at Carluccio's, placards resting against their knees beside their Kate Spade handbags.
Yeah, but they're doing something. I can't get on board with that sentiment.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I understand why you would do it. I just don't know. Can never get it all together.
Let me just, as I've got the emails in my hand here, otherwise I'll forget them for next week. Donna McManus says, you don't need to worry about tell us about the carbon next week. Keep that. Hold the thought there. And come up with a meme next week as well. We'd like to finish with something amusing. Or if some more York Rush, if you can't find a meme.
It's gone, Dad.
Oh, but they'll put it
I can do, I hope they do. There's something called Your Fashions, which is York Confessions.
Oh,
but some of those are pretty gross as well, actually. Yeah. Some of them are like, I weed in the sink in our kitchen.
Yeah,
and
don't
stuff.
Need that, really. I hope Ruth is enjoying university, says Donna McManus. Donna says, I went to Leeds University a long time ago, and I can say it was probably the best 3 years of my life.
Oh.
She loved hearing people say Joe, and so she says, I'm a born and bred Londoner, but absolutely loved living up north. I still count my university friends as my some of my best friends of all time. I came back to London eventually, but I still love the northern sense of humour, and I visit as often as I can. I'm nowhere near Ruth's age, but I find myself agreeing with her on most things. One of my favourite books is The Handmaid's Tale, and also 1984. I also agree that Friends is the funniest thing ever. Brackets, my husband hates it. Well, obviously he does. He's a man. I love Harry Potter books.
Plenty of men love...
they don't love it. They Friends. Might tolerate it, I think.
I disagree.
No, I don't think a lot of men don't love Friends. And I don't think everybody loves Raymond.
A lot of men love Friends.
Does anybody love Raymond?
No.
Right, we'll be back next week.
We'll be back next week.
With hopefully a meme and maybe some more York Rush. And your boxing.
Hopefully.
And your boxing.
Yeah, boxing updates, so. Yeah.
Now, Ruth, over the months we've been doing this podcast, we've discussed comedy quite a bit, and we've talked about Friends and everything.
Disgusting. We've made comedy.
I wish. But we've discussed we've discussed comedy quite a bit.
Yes.
And whenever we discuss comedy, you sort of disparage me in a way by saying, oh, yeah, here we go again, Fawlty Towers, blah, blah, blah. And it's become apparent to me that you've never watched Fawlty Towers. So I laid out the whole sum of £1.89 on Amazon Prime, got one episode of Fawlty Towers, and forced you to watch it.
You forced me. Like, I was happy to watch it because this is my job.
Well, anyway. See? Yeah. We forced you to watch Fawlty Towers, and you watched it this morning.
You said we as if the listeners were like, oh, yeah, watch Fawlty Towers.
Well, it is a we. I'll tell you why I say it. It's because I think it's probably Mark, my producer on Talk Radio, or it's somebody anyway at Talk Radio, who said to me, well, get her to watch it. So she just keeps taking the mickey out of you because, you know, my view is it's the greatest.
I still don't know how you get the like work out of it.
There's only 12 episodes. Yeah. So you only have 11 more to watch, and you've watched the whole series. But this, I just put a random one in, not even the best.
It was episode one, was it?
Episode one of season two.
Season two, there's only 12 episodes. That's a season.
Well, that's where we differ from the Americans. Season one was 6 episodes. Yeah, season two was 6 episodes.
Fair. That's like Fleabag.
View on it, please.
I did enjoy it.
Yeah,
I did think it was funny. It feels less like, oh, it's hilarious, and more like, oh, it's really safe and warm. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I thought one of the things that you wouldn't like about Fawlty Towers is that it's politically incorrect. It's something you couldn't make
nowadays. It's of its time. Yeah, I wouldn't like it if it was made, like, right, some of the jokes are funny. Some of the jokes are not funny because of the time that they were made in, like, some of the bits with Manuel are a bit cringy. And
that's what I thought. That's why you couldn't make it nowadays.
Yeah. No, but you couldn't make it nowadays because it also wouldn't... It wouldn't work nowadays. It wouldn't be funny. But a lot of the jokes are, like, timeless jokes.
Yeah, I think it would be
funny. I don't think it would be. All that stuff with Manuel would feel really
weird. I agree with you about the Manuel stuff. But
all the rest of it would be funny.
It's like a farce, in a way. It's like a little
play.
You can see why there's only 6 of them, because it's not like Friends where it sort of rolls on and on.
No, because it's not the characters as well. Like... You don't really learn anything about the characters.
Well,
particularly.
You learn that they're sort of locked in a loveless marriage, him and Sydney.
Yeah, but...
And you couldn't probably do that stuff these days, the stuff, you know, where she's a bit of a battle axe. I mean, they don't even have the word battle axe anymore.
I mean, but also, like, I don't think I would find that funny if it was modern characters, because I would find it rude to the woman. But it's off the time it was made in. Yeah, no, of course you can make it.
But some of it is classic timeless comedy.
Yeah, no, some of it is. But that doesn't, like...
And
I'm not saying
it's... And you did enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I did. I did enjoy it. I'm not saying I didn't. But I wouldn't want it to be made now. I think if it was made now, it wouldn't be funny. That doesn't mean it's not funny.
And it's like watching silent movies, silent comedies, because you're relying on sort of classic gags that would...
Well, no, I mean, it's very Shakespearean, the episode that we watched, in a way, you know, it's all mistaken.
We ought to say the one we watched was Communication Problems.
Yeah, it was all like...
Mrs. Richards.
Who, yeah, she couldn't hear, and whose was the money, and everyone kept getting the wrong end of the stick and blah, blah, blah. That's what happens in Shakespearean comedy, like,
it's classic.
And that was all really, really funny. The only bits I didn't like were the bits with Manuel, and like the stuff with the women, like, you take it with a pinch of salt and it's fine. And I thought Basil Fawlty is, like, personable and a good character and stuff.
It's a great character, isn't it?
Oh yeah,
Basil Fawlty. I mean, John Cleese, what annoys me is that John Cleese, all right, he's now probably mid-70s, maybe nearly 80. John Cleese said something, he's moved to Nevis, and he says London doesn't feel like a British city anymore, which I can sort
of... Oh, that is so EDL.
Well, yeah, people have
come
said
on.
That.
That's because people don't like change. Oh, it's not British anymore because it's not all British, white British people living there. Like, that's just because cities change.
Well, he's entitled to his opinion.
No, he's wrong there.
He's entitled to his
opinion. He's wrong.
Well,
you don't believe that he's wrong?
Yeah, I don't believe that he's wrong. I don't believe that he's wrong, because
But the only way he's saying that London doesn't feel British anymore is because of the people being different.
No, I think,
multiculturalism doesn't make something less British.
No, I agree with you. And I think it's great that London is a melting pot and all that sort of stuff. But what he's looking nostalgically back to an... doesn't feel like Britain in the 60s.
It doesn't feel like Britain in the 60s.
Yeah, well, he's an old guy. Let me tell you what annoys me. What annoys me is people are taking what he said there, putting their own interpretation on it, or putting what they imagine might be his interpretation on it, and retrospectively dissing Monty Python and Fawlty Towers.
No, that's not fair. Like,
yeah, Giles Corran wrote a whole column in the Times where he just sort of dissed John Cleese, and to me, Fawlty Towers is a work of genius.
I think I really enjoyed that episode of Fawlty Towers I watched, and it feels nostalgic for a time where of comedy that's just silly, and it's lovely. Like, I really did like it, but I don't think that gives John Cleese a free pass to say things. And I think that thing that he said about Britain not feeling British anymore...
No, it's London he said, I think.
Doesn't feel like a British city. I don't think we should criticise things from the time that they were in. Like, we should acknowledge it and acknowledge to say the stuff with Manuel, not really right. It's kind of racial stereotyping, and it's kind of cheap shots at immigrants, really. I'm not saying that it wasn't funny in the time that it was in, but I think you shouldn't completely give everything a free pass that you see in shows, but you also need to, if you're John Cleese or something, we don't live in the 60s anymore, and you can't say stuff like that. Because it's not true.
Let me tell you my take on it. I don't think London feels like a British city anymore. I don't think New York feels like New York anymore. I don't think Athens feels like a Greek city anymore. I don't think Paris feels like a French city anymore. Sure, the landmarks are still there. But what I'm saying is, when you go into a place and it's like Starbucks, and it's lots of, it's all become internationalised. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, when I first went to New York, it was like amazing.
Last time you were in New York, though?
Probably about 10 years ago, maybe, something like
you
that.
You were in New York in 2009?
Yeah, I did a show from New York with Edouard Lapaglia, my French friend. We went over to New York and did a show. It might have been in 2000, yeah, certainly in the 2000s. But what I felt was, when I first went there, when it was the 1970s, it really felt like, it felt strange, it felt foreign, it was completely different from London, and the whole ethos of life was completely different from London.
New York still feels different,
because they've got yellow cabs.
I mean, I don't know, I don't really know, but, or like Athens, I mean, I've been to, like, Paris, I think it feels very different to London. Like, very, extremely different. Like, I know that it has similar chains and stuff, but Paris does feel different. The people are different, the culture's different, the atmosphere of the city is different. Like, it is, they are different places. But also, I think the problem with what John Cleese said is that London doesn't feel like a British city anymore. Yeah, it doesn't feel like a British city from the 60s, because it isn't a British city from the 60s. It's a British city from whatever year it's in. Yeah. In 2000, it was a British city in 2000. A city doesn't stay the same because the people change and the place changes. Whenever I've been to London, it feels like a British city, but... Because also, I don't want it to feel like a British city from the 60s. The only people that would want it to feel like a British city from the 60s are straight white men.
Have you seen Austin Powers? It's great fun. That's a British city from the 60s.
No, but that's the problem with nostalgia.
Julie Christie and Michael Caine going around in an E-Type Jaguar?
That is the entire problem with nostalgia, is that you remember all the good bits and none of the bad bits.
Can't think of any bad bits of the 60s.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Vietnam, obviously.
No, but also, like, women's rights. Like, and that's only one example of, like, women's rights. But also, attitudes towards immigrants.
Why only straight white men? Why wouldn't homosexual white men in their 70s...
I don't remember the exact year when homosexuality was decriminalised.
67.
So, okay, until 66, they're not going to be having a great deal of fun. And then still the attitudes. Like, you know what I mean? Nostalgia. It's the same. You've read Orwell. Like, Orwell was nostalgic for pre-war England. Like, you're nostalgic for whatever time you don't live in, but it's not a better time.
So you'll be going to university. I mean, at the moment your focus is on exams, but you will be going to university. I'm wondering, almost certainly. I'm just wondering how much trepidation you view it with. You know, how much?
I'm not really nervous at all.
You're not nervous about
it? Not now. Like, no. I probably will be, you know, before I go.
I don't feel
nervous about it at the moment, at least.
I'm reading this story about James Murray, who is the father of Ben Murray. You've probably seen him on the news. Ben Murray was the Bristol student who killed himself.
Yeah.
And his father, who's a very smart guy, he's got a background in data analytics. He's devised, or is devising, an early warning system to help universities build a rounded picture of undergraduates by linking records of exam results with data on lecture attendance, grades and disciplinary or rent issues. Because his son...
It was the whole picture thing.
Because his son was, you know, he'd sort of disappeared from the system. He wasn't attending lectures and all that sort of stuff. Mm. And, of course, nobody... He got a letter saying attend lectures. The father, the parents, they weren't informed.
Yeah.
There was nothing like that. Northumbria University's testing his system created by James Murray, son Ben killed himself. So, it gives an overview of whether students...
It should be Bristol, shouldn't it, really, testing the system?
Well, you'd have thought so, but anyway, Northumbria, I suppose, while it's a test. The tool gives an overview of whether students are paying rent, attending lectures, handing in essays, checking books out at the libraries, and could trigger help rather than penalties. Because that was all that was happening to his son. He was just being told, oh, you've got to do this and you've got to do that and you haven't paid your rent or whatever.
I think, like, people forget that you're either 18 or 19 usually when you go to uni, which is so young. Like, it's and you go from having a complete support network, well, I mean, if you're lucky, you do, and a vast majority of people and friends, like, you've known, and a lot of people have friends they've known for years and years and years who can tell if something's up with you, and then you go to having nothing and being completely on your own, and
I think it's a really hard transition.
I think it would be hard for anyone, but especially being so young, it's actually amazing that no one's thought, oh, maybe this is...
Maybe we ought to keep an eye on them, and he's doing it digitally, which is good. Ben's family did not know that the 19-year-old was, quotes, quietly suffering, end quotes, nor that he'd been asked to leave the university for failing to attend lectures. It's bizarre that they would, you know, not just inform the parents or anybody close.
But then you think, oh, they're adults now, but... You've not been an adult for 18 years, and then just one day you're meant to be completely fine.
They worked out after his death that he had missed exams, not paid accommodation fees, and was hard to contact in halls.
It's so sad, isn't it?
It's so sad. Mr. Murray used his background in data analytics to devise an early warning system to help universities build a rounded picture. And it's just really, it's a digital way of keeping an eye on students. But presumably... You'll tell us before when you start dropping
it. No, but you think you will. And, like, a lot of people have never had a mental health problem ever, you know, before they go to university. And then that is just what triggers it, is being away from home and your family and everyone you've ever known.
And it's also what we said before, the sort of unstructured...
Yeah, it's the amount of free time. Like,
at least if
you do sort of a science degree or something, you do, you know, 5 or 6 contact hours a day. But if you do something like English Lit or history, you have about 4 lectures sometimes. 4 hours a week.
Yeah.
It's just nothing. And then the rest of the time is just free.
Yeah. Well, you can spend some of that time preparing for the podcast. Do you have a meme of the week?
Yes. This is like a conversation thing. So, you, do you want 4 string cheese sticks? Me, no, that's way too many. You, I deep fried them and here's some marinara sauce. Me, okay, yeah, that's a nice warm-up to what I'm actually going to eat.
Very good. I almost had a meme of the week. This would have been a meme of the week if you didn't have one. My friend Francis Foster, the comedian, who sent out a tweet at the time when Donald Trump this week... I haven't talked Donald Trump, but let's not worry about it. Donald, and friend of ours, Great Alliance and all that, you know, not necessarily
Donald Trump.
Not Donald Trump, but the American president, the office of America, the office of the American president.
I thought,
and
let's
the
not
nation,
get into it.
Nation of America. We should have talked about it, but we didn't. But anyway, at the time, Donald Trump, there was this scare story that he was, the Americans were going to buy up our NHS and everything. It was all over Twitter, you know, people thinking that Donald Trump was going to buy up the NHS. And as a sort of parody of those tweets, Francis Foster tweeted, "If it wasn't for the NHS, my mum would have died from liver failure a few years ago." Basically, the NHS is the reason I'm still renting, which I think
honestly don't think that's that good.
Oh, I think it's brilliant. I think it was just
I've heard that joke about a gazillion times.
Only because I said it.
No, not that joke. Not his joke. That kind of joke for years and years and years.
Well, give me an example of that kind of joke.
Like, Uncle Ian makes it all the time.
Well, in what way?
So he'll, so like, you know when Grandma choked at Christmas dinner?
Mm.
So he said, so Uncle Dave said, "Oh, for God's sake, Ian, you shouldn't have saved her." Oh, like, that's a similar kind of joke. And they say, you know, about inheritance. Like, everyone makes that joke about your inheritance.
But that's cleverly done, because it's in the...
I get it. It's in the style of those, like, thanks to the NHS, my son's still here, or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as amazing as you think it is. I think it's funny, but I don't think it's, like, laugh out loud.
Let's allow the listeners to decide on that. If you want to decide on that or anything else, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
And you can find the songs in full on the Spotify playlist, which you can search for by writing Martin and Ruth or Ruthie, me and my dad.